Good afternoon. This is the Wednesday, January 29th afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, good afternoon. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon. Fritz?
Here.
Hardesty?
Here.
Udaly?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Now we'll hear from legal counsel.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. If it does not, you will be ruled out of order. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you're in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Please remain seated in council chambers unless entering or exiting. If you are filming the proceedings, please do not use bright lights or disrupt the meeting. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, interrupting testimony, or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of their meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Very good, thank you. First item is time certain 79.
Amend the comprehensive plan map, zoning map, and Title 33, planning and zoning, to revise the single dwelling residential designations and base zones.
Perfect timing. Thank you. As you will recall from January 16th, I announced that Council will begin discussions on amendments with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff. As I noted then, public testimony will not be taken today. Today, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff will present 4 concepts for technical amendments. People can find these amendments posted either on the Residential Infill Project landing page on the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's website and read along, or the hard copies that are provided for those who are here today. And if there's anybody who would like a copy, I believe they're outside on the table. Is that correct?
I think we might have a few copies here at my desk here.
Okay. Council will return on February 12th at 2 p.m. time certain here at City Hall to continue discussions on additional amendments to the residential infill program. I look forward to hearing about a deeper affordability bonus from BPS staff. I also want to note that no public testimony will be taken during the February 12th hearing either. I look forward to hearing public testimony later in the RIP timeline in response to the concepts for amendments. I'll now turn this over to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff, Sandra Wood and Morgan Tracy, to walk us through the proposed concepts for amendments. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
My name is
Sandra Wood with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me is Morgan Tracy, who is the project manager for the Residential Infill Project. Today and on February 12th, we'll be having 2 work sessions with Council on possible amendments to the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommendation on the project. Neither today nor on February 12th will we have specific code language or specific map amendments. Instead, what we have before you are some concept for those amendments. So we're not looking for formal motions or seconds in either of these meetings. Rather, we're looking for this kind of a nod of the heads or a straw poll, if you will, on which amendments have support and from the whole council. And if we have that support, then that tells us as staff to go back and start drafting those amendments to bring forward for hearings in March. So That's what our plan is. Today, we have four amendments, concepts for those amendments. We posted them on our website last week, and as the mayor mentioned, they're available here. The ones that we have today are more technical in nature. So Morgan will walk you through the amendment. Hopefully you'll have a conversation about it, and then we can see the comfort level amongst the council on those, and then we'll move to the next amendment. That's the plan.
Sounds good.
Commissioner Fritz.
Aren't we all supposed to say that we live in the city of Portland, therefore we could have a conflict of interest?
Yes, that would be helpful. Thank you, Commissioner.
All right. Commissioner Fritz, do you want to start?
We live in the city of Portland, therefore we may have a conflict of interest.
Yes, great. Commissioner Hardesty?
Thank you, Mayor. I live in the city of Portland, and I guess there may be a potential conflict of interest.
Commissioner Udaly?
I also live in the city of Portland and acknowledge a potential conflict of interest, although I'd love if someone could tell me what that might be since I'm a renter. But
I own real property in the city of Portland. I do not intend to change the usage, but out of an abundance of caution, I'm declaring a potential conflict of interest.
And if you might just respond to Commissioner Daly's concern.
Query.
My understanding is that because this might increase the availability of rental property, that might then increase or decrease the...
I'm sorry, Commissioner Fritz. Wait, we've got an audio problem with your mic. He's going to... check it. Sorry.
We had to pirate parts from your. Just, and don't lean back in your chair. Other than
that, it's okay.
Shall I start again?
Welcome home.
So because we all live in the city of Portland, if we own property, that might make the property more valuable because we could make it into a duplex. If we rent property, it could make rental property more available and less expensive.
Well, I'll cross my fingers for that, but
I know, really.
Thank you.
Great. So Morgan will walk us through the packages of amendments.
So that's probably the most fun we're going to have today. That conversation was there.
Oh, don't count on it.
That's very technical, right?
And I apologize in advance. So amendment number one includes four separate parts. These are the most technical in nature out of the package. And are necessary to address changes to the code package since the Planning Commission's vote last spring. The first align the code updates to reflect changes adopted more recently by the Better Housing by Design project. They align the proposed visitability standard in the single dwelling zones to match the recently adopted standards in the multi-dwelling zones. They update the map changes to reflect zoning changes completed as part of the 82nd Avenue project, which affects two parcels on Northeast 82nd Avenue, and clean up a few language consistency issues between the code sections. Any questions or conversation?
Okay. Can we? A thumbs up would be wonderful. Do these four sound good? Three?
I will voice any objections. How's that?
That sounds wonderful.
All right.
Great.
Next up, House Bill 2001. This amendment is prompted by the House Bill 2001. So currently within the city, duplexes are limited to corner lots in the single dwelling zones. The Planning Commission's recommendation allows interior lot duplexes, except when they are located in natural resource and hazard constrained areas, which are identified by our proposed Z overlay. House Bill 2001, which passed after the PSC's vote, specifies that cities must allow a duplex on each lot that allows the development of a house. This amendment aligns the residential infill project with the House bill by allowing duplexes on all lots, including those within the Z overlay.
That makes sense. Any questions, or can we do thumbs up?
No, I'm a
thumbs
up.
She has a thumbs up. She's already.
I follow the directions. If I like it, my thumb is up. If I don't.
Okay, and just to be clear then, this technical amendment brings RIP into compliance with House Bill 2001. Is that the intent?
Then
that is partially the intent. There are two provisions that are still outstanding, including the R10 or 20 zones, which are not addressed through this amendment, and cottage clusters, which will come back to address later.
Okay, so this is the first part then of effectively three intersections with House Bill 2001.
Correct.
And okay. When he says we're coming back with it later in a separate project aside from residential infill in a future year.
Okay, any objections on this? I don't see any.
So great.
Okay.
We'll draft that up.
This third amendment responds to Senate Bill 534. So Senate Bill 534 requires cities to allow development of at least one dwelling unit on pre-existing platted lots. So the image there is just an example of an area that's been platted with 25 by 100 square foot lots. And this bill makes no distinction based on the zoning, lot size, or other lot dimensions. However, it does provide that the presence of certain constraints can exclude a lot from being considered buildable. Currently, the zoning code specifies minimum lot sizes that vary by zone for when primary buildings are allowed on them. These amendments establish rules to confirm substandard platted lots. Lots of record, which are properties created through a deed transfer, and lot remnants will continue to be subject to the same standards and minimum dimensional requirements that apply today. For the remaining substandard lots that don't meet the base zone lot sizes, they would be considered buildable unless there is not adequate infrastructure, the lot is steeply sloping, it is in a 100-year floodplain, or it's within an environmental overlay zone. For context, outside of the R5 zone, there are about 30 platted areas with substandard lots for the zone that they're located in. Of those, many are constrained by slopes and E-zones and or non-existent infrastructure. There are about 7 plats that are less constrained, representing roughly 4,000 lots total.
Commissioner Fritz.
So, for my colleagues who are new to this issue, these lots, many of them were platted as real estate scams back in the 1880s. They were sold, purported to be, certainly in my neighborhood, they were going to be holiday homes for people who wanted to be so close to Portland, 7 miles, but unfortunately it wasn't all that close to Portland. So these lots largely remained undeveloped. In the and in fact, many areas they were zoned R5 or one house per 5,000 square foot lot. There was a land use appeal or a land use board of appeals case in West Portland Park, my neighborhood, in the 1970s, where LUBA affirmed that there were infrastructure deficiencies that would not allow even two homes on a 10,000 square foot lot. And it turns out that the study, which I've put into the record before it closed, states that the problem is the interceptor in the sanitary sewer line in Tryon Creek State Park, which, as you can imagine, doing a major infrastructure project in Tryon Creek State Park would be fraught with multiple different problems. And so LUBA and the city has since that time had the rule that you couldn't develop on these lots. In the 1990s, in other areas of the city, developers figured out that you could knock down an affordable single-family home on a 5,000 square foot lot and put up two skinny houses on each side of the other lot. The city addressed that by saying that a lot had to be vacant for 5 years before the second home could be built, which of course developers got around by building one and then building the others 5 years later, but it did diminish the number of demolitions of good housing stock. So then Senator Shamir Fagan decided to put this amendment through the legislature, even though the city of Portland had a position against it. And here we are. So the problem is that the Senate Bill 534 allows us to not have development on every 25 by 100 foot lot if there are infrastructure constraints. Morgan very kindly sent me a study from Bureau of Environmental Services from 2010, saying that there weren't infrastructure, that their concern was infiltration of stormwater, because a lot of this area doesn't have adequate stormwater coverage either. The problem with that is that was based on the 2010 comprehensive plan map, and we already changed the comprehensive plan map in 2016 to allow more development in this area. If we then allow much more development per this amendment, it's very likely we don't know. There's no evidence in the record to say whether or not the sewage system is adequate or not. And so we're going to have another amendment, which I understand we won't be talking about this time, to address the issue of cumulative infrastructure problems. That is one of the big issues that I have with this project, is that an individual developer is not going to have to pay to change the interceptor in Tryon Creek State Park. It'll be left up to the ratepayers and the people of Portland, when that system eventually fails, to then fund an extremely expensive project. And I think we're all familiar with extremely expensive infrastructure projects. So I am very concerned about these amendments. I believe we should be doing much more study of these areas and what the potential infrastructure constraints might be. And in particular, in the area where we've already done a study, I don't believe there's enough evidence in the record to say we can go ahead and do the changes that have been proposed.
So a couple rebuttal points, not necessarily rebuttal, just additional consideration points.
Discussion points. You are happy. You are welcome to rebut.
So I understand that Bureau of Environmental Services reached out to your office to talk more about the 2010 memo and the implications of what's included in those recommendations, and just in terms of how that would play out and what those findings were based on. So those conversations are pending. In terms of this amendment, one consideration is we have a mandate from the state to implement effective March 1st. We have the ability to hold back on confirming certain lots for buildability when there are infrastructure issues, and that will be built into the code language that we're providing. So there's a bit of a safeguard that's built into this lot confirmation process around sewer, water, stormwater, and streets.
But that's on an individual basis. It's not on an area-wide basis.
That's true.
And furthermore, has the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability done an analysis of the 2016 comp plan and asked Environmental Services to figure out whether that particular intercept is going to be enough?
That work was completed as part of the comprehensive plan update, at least based on the 2016 comp plan.
So if I could get a copy of the BES analysis on the 2016 comp plan, that would be very helpful. And then I'd like to know whether they've done an analysis if you then, in some cases, triple the density, what difference that makes.
Mayor?
Are you done?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner
Hurst. I'm sorry. I'm curious about the timeline for this, right? We're on a short timeline to complete part one. I just want to be clear about kind of if we go back and do this analysis, and is there a specific timeline where that will happen? Will that delay us moving forward with both RIP and the other work that we have coming back?
Well, our approach is to come into compliance with Senate Bill 534. We have the March 1st deadline. On March 3rd, that Monday, if a developer comes in to the Bureau of Development Services, they need to implement this Senate bill. And at that point, we won't have any code in place for all the planners to be consistent on how they do it. So we've been working with them on what are the checklists that they are going to be using for implementation of the Senate bill. And that's what this amendment does, is state what the checklist is so that we can all be consistent, and then it will go into effect later. I think, Commissioner Fritz, what you're talking about is the cumulative impact, which, of course, is important. But the Senate bill has put us in a position of for Bureau of Development Services to need to ascertain whether development is allowed on these lots on an individual site-by-site basis. And BDS needs the tools, council-adopted tools, to know what checklist they're going to be using. And that's what this amendment does, is just to state what the checklist is. And you're right, it is implemented on a site-by-site basis. But the service bureaus are also involved on those, and they can do future planning for the cumulative impacts. So that was our approach to this, set up a site-by-site.
Well, what about the areas process where we have actually already identified, where the city and LUBA have identified an infrastructure problem?
Then they could use that information and not approve the lot confirmation. That's the idea,
I would suggest,
right?
And Commissioner Hardesty, to your point, I've been asking since this bill passed, could we please do that first because of the quicker deadline?
Right.
The rest of it we don't have to do until the end of next year. So I'm really concerned that this piece, which is really important in terms of public burden of future infrastructure costs, is not getting adequate attention. I guess part of the concern will be seeing the actual amendments as to having heard these concerns, is there a way for you to craft amendments that would allow in areas that have demonstrated cumulative impact concerns to say no?
We'll work with the service bureaus on that and making sure the language is clear. So that when we bring back, if you are all okay with this idea of a site-by-site checklist, in essence, that's what we're asking for, you're okay on today, then we can go forth and craft those amendment languages, knowing that this concern is something that you want Bureau of Development Services and the service bureaus to look at.
So I think the second piece to this is, should we change the zoning in certain areas? And I know you are changing the zoning in certain areas. And so that kind of plays into this. If there are, I'm also very concerned that we could not only have, where there's currently one house allowed, have two, but since you can have a duplex on each side, you can then have four. And these are, again, often in places, as they found in 1889, that are not accessible at all by public transportation. So we're then continuing to affect the climate crisis by putting more people where they have to drive to get anywhere. So could we, as part of this project, take a look at the proposed zoning on the skinny lots?
But the zoning is inconsequential. I think the Senate bill, correct me if I'm wrong, Morgan, says if the lot was platted,
right,
it doesn't matter what the zone is, you need to allow for a house on it.
I had a conversation with the city, with one of the city attorneys, about could we require it to be attached housing, for example, in which case it doesn't allow single-family houses. It allows, if we change the zone to 2.5, it allows a home on each side, but it doesn't then, if we require them to be attached, it doesn't allow two on each side.
There is a proposal within the residential infill project for narrow lots that they are already required to be attached. So the narrow lots are de facto, whether there are five or seven, it's based on the lot width that they're going to be required to be attached. So we've captured that particular concern.
Okay.
I think there's also, if we shift the zoning to a higher intensity zone to reflect the lot sizes, we lose the ability to apply these additional constraint tests.
So okay,
because they're substandard in size, we have this authority granted by the bill to do that.
That makes sense. And then my final concern on this, we received a letter from Concordia, and I know that this, before the record closed, and after the record closed, but as a practical matter, we're going to be hearing amendments, so presumably things that have come in after the first deadline can be considered in the next round. So so we had the concern from Concordia that there are actually some of these lots off of Alberta, which would be really fine to include, but they are 4,000 square foot lots. So I don't have all the details in front of me, but if you could look at that and bring that back when
we
for consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some of these, some places, although I thought we did look very diligently lot by lot throughout the city to decide where is a good place to upzone. Mm-hmm. It could be that we've missed some and that we could. Mm-hmm.
And this amendment isn't the full rezone. I mean, in the PSC's proposal, 7,000 lots are being rezoned, are proposed to be rezoned from R5 to R2.5. All this amendment does is set the checklist up for BDS to be able to implement in a clear and objective manner, BDS and the service bureaus. And that's what we want your thumbs up on today.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question as well? I want to get back to the deadline, the March 1st deadline for Senate Bill 534. So I obviously support residential infill, but in the event that residential infill is not supported by the council, we're still going to be in compliance with Senate Bill 534 by the deadline. Is that correct?
So we've been working with BDS and the city attorney's office to develop the standard operating procedure that they'll be implementing on the counter, because the Senate bill goes into effect as applied, which means that they have to take the bill and follow the instructions in the bill. This SOP, which essentially follows the amendment language.
Right, but we're doing the SOP in the context of an amendment to RIP, to RIP.
Right.
And so if RIP does not go forward, we're still going to use this checklist to come into compliance, I presume,
yes,
with Senate Bill 534.
But the SOP is exactly that. It's an SOP, not adopted, codified language that's been endorsed by the City Council.
Great. I want to thank you and the Bureau of Development Services, BPS, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and the legal team, because I know you've been going around in circles on this and doing a lot of extra overtime. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thumbs up.
So we have thumbs up from...
thumbs up.
I have voiced my concerns, but I look forward to seeing them. And so just one clarification, you can do this standard operating procedure as an administrative matter because of the Senate bill. We don't have to pass it before March 1st.
Say that again.
may frame that in terms of a question. City Attorney, sorry to put you on the spot. Can the Bureau of Development Services implement the concepts that have just been described at the council as a standard operating procedure, or does the council, would it be safer for the council to pass something quicker?
The bill takes effect on March 1, and so the Bureau will be required to comply with the statute. Unfortunately, the way the statute's written, it's vague and requires a lot of the Bureau to exercise a lot of discretion. So the standard operating procedures would be a placeholder until council adopts code. But the ultimately, we need to have code so that we have defensible criteria to apply should someone challenge when the Bureau decides, yes, this lot complies with what the statute requires us to do.
So again, it seems to me that it would be wise to do that before the rest of residential infill.
Yes. Well, or at the same, I mean, this takes effect March 1st.
Right.
I guess the challenge will be, and correct me if I'm wrong, legal counsel, I think the challenge will be is if we have a developer that wants to develop on one of these lots and we tell them something different from what the legislation tells them, then we will be in a lawsuit early on after March 1st, right? Because that developer will want to have the benefit of this new law. Now, the question the question is, what comes first, the horse or the egg? I mean, the fact that the council has to vote on it, I would like us to vote on it before March 1st because that gives certainty to everyone about us following the new regulations as outlined by the legislature. Are we prepared to do that? Is that going to make us crazy?
It'll make us crazy. Ideally, that would have been wonderful. But at this point, our whole record is together. All the testimony folks provided for all of these amendments are all together. Our findings and our justification for the project are together. We would have to split all of that apart, which would delay both packages to the point. I mean, we're talking 2 months at this point.
And no, I don't want you to do that. No, I feel like we are on a good path, and I don't want to provide you any direction that slows this process down. I think just having this conversation on the public record makes it really clear that the standing operating procedure will become the regulation under which we will operate, and then the City Council will affirm it at a later date as we're updating the code. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's correct.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm there.
Thumbs up on this one?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So the last one we have is very exciting.
This is our fourth and final vote, fourth and final amendment today.
Do that when I have coffee
Sorry.
In my mouth.
And this is really intended to improve a city review process. So currently, when an owner is trying to convert three narrow lots into two wider lots, a two-step process is required to do that. First, they would go through a lot consolidation. So if you're looking at the images on the slide, that's taking lots 27 and 28 and combining them into a single lot, followed by a property line adjustment with the adjacent lot to then create those two wider lots. So this amendment combines both those processes into a single replat process, which is the images on the bottom of the screen there, which shaves off about 2 months and about $3,000 off the process.
Commissioner Fritz.
Somebody brought to my attention this week that the we set it at 60% because that's what the Housing Bureau does, but 50% of medium area medium family income is the income limit for vouchers in Section 8. Is that correct?
Excuse me. So are you talking about the replat amendment?
I'm talking about the housing affordability at 60%. Why is it 60, not 50?
So we're not talking about that amendment right now. We're talking about the replat process amendment on your screen.
And we will return on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I turned the wrong page.
To talk more about that amendment.
Flipped the.
Okay, you're ahead of us.
Never
you're ahead of us. So answer that question.
I know you're looking for the more exciting stuff, but it's just replats today.
It's a good primer,
She's
though.
Always.
When we answer that, I do want to hear the answer to that question. So that'll be something we'll look forward to.
Well, yes.
Thanks for the early heads up on that.
I support the replat amendment.
Yeah. So you support the replat amendment.
Yeah.
What do you love?
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't
okay.
imagine.
Okay. The replat amendment goes forward. Then we'll go ahead and work on all four of these. Amendments and bring them back later in March and share them with the public ahead of time because we'll have formal code language and a hearing on those later. Right? And that's, so our next steps is that we are hoping that council members will indulge us and give us your final amendments for residential infill by next Wednesday, February 5th, so we are familiar with them and we can help you start crafting those, and we can come back on February 12th. So February 12th would be our next meeting here at the dais to go through a similar exercise that we did today and talk about the concepts for all of those other amendments, and that will make up our full list of amendments that we work on, towards, and then staff will go away and do the technical work and come back in March for a public hearing with those amendments.
Great. Let me just do a little wrap up, because I'm sure some people are wondering, well, why don't they get to testify on this? Mm-hmm. There's really two things we're doing today. Number one, we are hearing from the Bureau on the technical amendments that the Bureau recommends the council include in the discussion going forward, and we're also looking at amendments that are based on testimony that we received.
Correct.
And there will be other opportunities for people to testify on the package going forward. So just to clarify, we will identify other potential amendment concepts for the residential infill project on February 12th at 2 p.m. time certain, right here in Portland City Hall Council Chambers. Mm-hmm. And as a reminder, the record remains closed, correct? The council will reopen the record for additional testimony at a later date. If you've submitted testimony to members of the council after the close of the record on January 17th, it is not considered part of the RIP record. And I would instead encourage you to resubmit that testimony when the record is reopened, either through the MAP app during a council hearing when the record is open for testimony, or by mailing to the City Council during the open record period. And so with that, this conversation is continued to February 12th, 2 p.m. time certain.
Thank you.
And we are now in recess till 4 p.m.